This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, I'm trying. Oh, well, we'll just start this without any music today. Or maybe not. Because this is going to be hard for me. So let's give it a shot. Because it's really just a simple question. What kind of person would shoot a dog? That's right, shoot a dog. And I don't mean accidentally, careless with your gun, thinking he was a deer or a raccoon or something. I mean shoot him. Stand over him, target him, and pull the trigger. The way someone did our dog Zephyr this week. This animal, wanting nothing more than to sniff the outdoors and run around the yard and get some love from everyone in sight, stumbled into the house Tuesday night. Despite the fact he made no noise and did nothing more unusual than lie down to rest without first jumping up to say hi, Sarah knew he was injured, and the x-rays showed why. A bullet, having crossed through his chest, piercing a lung, putting him into shock and critical condition. All at an angle the vet determined must have been intentional. A dog. Do you feel better now? Was that somehow fun and exciting? Because watching her decide which line to sign on the Do Not Resuscitate form sure wasn't. Zephyr was carried to his everyday vet on a stretcher, with IV fluids and an oxygen tank attached. Surgeries were performed to slow the internal bleeding and reinflate the collapsed lung, but he remained in critical condition throughout the day. Yet, somehow, 24 hours later, he was walking, softly but steadily. Obviously, this isn't just any dog. He was originally found in a home with over 100 animals, rescued from a stake in the yard with his 4-foot length of rope. His casual nickname of Wonder Dog is well earned. Could you take a bullet through the lung and be released home 48 hours later at the approval of your amazed doctor? He has scars, but he's not scared. And neither are we, but we are so mad. So whoever you are, you best hide. But good things come from all experiences. Fear of loss reminds us what matters. Astonishing events expand your thinking. And talent. Talent shines. And an animal clinic on Georgetown Road showed me their talent, as well as their strength and compassion and understanding. No one, not even a wonder dog, recovers so quickly from their trauma without help. And with their help, this part of Stonehenge is still standing. I hope nobody else has to ever experience that. All right, let's move on to better topics anyway. Although your dog reviving and recovering is a pretty damn good topic. All right, let's fire up these microphones and see which ones decide to play along today. Two guests from Southern Environmental League Council.
Law Center.
Law Center. See, that's what I get for not writing down all the information that I should on my form. Southern Environmental Law Center. Because it's not like I didn't know that. I just refuse to share it with everyone. All right. Kay, your microphone is the one that was fighting back this morning. So Kay Slaughter here, senior attorney. Chat away for a moment, please.
Yes, I'm here from Southern Environmental Law Center with
and
my
it's
colleague.
Spitting in and out, Sean. I don't know if you could hear that. So let's reset the microphones over there for a moment. We are going to talk about offshore drilling here this morning while Sean chats up the microphones for just a second. And for those of you who aren't up to date on the immediate needs of this conversation, offshore drilling has been something in the news for the last, for the last year anyway, as the Bush administration has made it quite a newsworthy topic. So let's try this now. Kay Slaughter, senior attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center, welcome. And you ladies are going to have to get really close or pass the microphone back and forth when it's your turn to chat. Also here, Deborah Murray. Ms. Murray, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. And I think that's how we're going to have to share the microphone this morning because the mixer is beyond the knowledge of Sean and I so far. All right, so Deborah Murray, Kay Slaughter here to talk about offshore drilling. I think this is something that's going to get a couple phone calls, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's toll-free because offshore drilling, even though we're not on right on the shore, it obviously something that affects everyone in the area. Southern Environmental Law Center, just a quick, covers Tennessee, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida?
No, Alabama.
Alabama. All right, Kay, you're going to have to just jump right in there and shout almost. In Alabama, not Florida. Alabama.
Correct.
Right. And I really apologize, but sometimes the technological equipment confounds me and more accurately dumbfounds me. All right. Basics. We know why the search for fuel has come about. And become so important. But why Virginia and the South Atlantic?
Well, I think it's in part a concern from the administration, the past administration, that they wanted to do something to say that they were dealing with the oil issues. But we think this is the wrong answer. There hasn't been any drilling in the Atlantic. It hasn't even been discussed for the last 20 years. But that's the area that the Bush administration decided to look to and to open up to exploration and drilling.
Now, as I go through the webpage of SELC, and there are multiple articles and links on this topic, the one that keeps coming back to me all the time and throughout all the information that is offered is the reasons that we should not do this are the beauty of the coastal waters, the needed ecology, the tourism. But isn't this the same for the Gulf Coast? I don't understand why, and I'm not saying that Southern Environmental Law Center approves what has gone on the Gulf Coast, but it has gone on the Gulf Coast. And what makes it different for the Atlantic Coast?
Well, I'll start out with one reason why it's different, in that there is very little potential for recoverable oil and natural gas. The former administration has already acknowledged that they've said, quote, that there's barely enough resource potential to support exploration throughout the entire Mid-Atlantic, which is the area where Virginia is. So, of course, that means that there's even less justification for exploring in Virginia. And the Bush administration estimated that there are only 130 million barrels of oil potentially recoverable in the Virginia lease area. That would be a little over 6 days worth of oil at current rates. And for natural gas, their recoverable would only last about 18 days. So that's one significant difference, that there's just not enough out there to justify the risk. And the other thing is, yes, we have a lot of data from the Gulf Coast, but as Kay mentioned, the data that we do have on the Atlantic is obsolete. There's been a moratorium in effect for 26 years. So the data that we have is over 30 years old, and there's just too little is known, and we have all kinds of resources that would potentially be impacted.
And I just like to add to that, another very big difference is the fact that the Atlantic, if you really look, beginning at Cape Cod all the way down to the South Atlantic, is a huge migratory area for all kinds of whales, dolphins, sea turtles, and a number of different fish that is essential fish habitat for a number of different fish that we fish for commercially as well as recreationally.
And that's not similar case can't be made for the Gulf Coast?
It's definitely not that kind of migratory pattern where you have these whales, several of them being endangered whales that are coming from the North Atlantic down through the South Atlantic. So that is that is very different from the Gulf Coast. Of course, the Gulf Coast does experience storms, but as you know, the Atlantic coast, the South Atlantic in particular, experiences many tropical storms and hurricanes, and a number of them that never make land here in Virginia still are having impacts on the ocean. And were there rigs out there, oil rigs, we do run the risk of spills.
And I'll just add to that, that the government, when they came out with a proposal on leasing areas offshore Virginia in early December, there was a workshop sponsored by the federal government, and they had various scientists there, and all of which said, we just don't have the data. The data is obsolete. And the government, the federal government, admitted itself that you can't just transfer the data from the Gulf Coast over to the Atlantic.
Well, let's stop right here and jump into, I think, what is a very important question for listeners who aren't quite as informed as the two of you are, Kay Slaughter, Deborah Murray, senior attorneys at the Southern Environmental Law Center, as we talk about offshore drilling. What is the process to make it legal to do so? Because currently it is not completely legal to begin drilling, correct?
Well, the moratoria has been lifted by Congress, had a moratoria so that you couldn't drill. Now that's been lifted, and in fact, they're going through a process of the federal government is going through a lease sale. So actually, yes, they are going through the process leading to what they hope in 2011 will be a lease sale of a couple of million acres off the coast of Virginia for exploration for gas and oil drilling.
So this lease sale, that's the next step towards making it legal to drill. But how did we get here?
Well, we got here as just to be a little bit more specific. Former President Bush lifted the moratorium back in June of this past year. And then Congress for the last 26 years has had in their annual appropriations, they've had a moratorium, and they let that expire at the end of September. So that allows things to go forward. For the entire country, there's a five-year program that there's a plan in place that says, okay, here are the areas in the country where we will potentially allow oil and gas leasing. And Virginia was included in that particular plan. So the next steps, what's happening right now, when I mentioned the workshop in December, the government puts out the notice that they want to go forward with leasing these areas off the coast of Virginia. And then there's an environmental study and public comment is allowed. So that's the next step before they decide to go forward, actually.
And where does the new administration stand on this? Because I'm aware that there have been multiple decisions made by the Bush administration that in the first few weeks of the new administration have been revoked or turned around. And is this one of those that might possibly happen?
We don't know where the new administration will be on this. We do know that our own governor has spoken out and said that this lease sale is not consistent with Virginia's policy, and that several congressmen from Virginia have also spoken out and asked the federal agency that's in charge of this to withdraw this sale just to allow the new administration to take a look at the entire lease sale program. I might just mention that these oil companies have hundreds of thousands of acres that are under lease in other parts of the country that they haven't used. So it's not like this is the only place they could go and drill for oil and gas. And about 20% of the leases that they already have, they've only used about 20% of the leases that they already have. So it's not going to hurt anything to put off this lease sale, and we believe that should be done.
And the other thing that we should talk about a little bit is that with the new administration, they haven't come out to say that they're definitely against all offshore drilling, but they have made clear that we need to have a larger energy package. And part of that energy package means that we need to get away from fossil fuels to the extent that we can. Drilling for oil and gas is only going to increase our dependence on fossil fuels and, of course, contribute to global warming and climate change.
But while the administration may feel that way and may have said that multiple times, doesn't it all come down to what the average citizen wants? Because these are politicians, even our president, who want to be reelected, and it's what the average citizen in their area, however small, however large, says, this is what I want. This is what I need. And despite the fact, and I believe one of you ladies said, that we really, if we get all the oil in the South Atlantic region, it's only enough for 6 days?
That was in the Virginia region. Talking about the entire Atlantic, it's only enough for 6 months.
For 6 months.
That's in entire Atlantic, not just the South Atlantic.
And because of everything we went through over the summer with these high gas prices, or seemingly high because no one wants to compare it to Europe, they say, well, hey, if that'll lower my gas price for next month, then let's do it anyway. But people don't seem to have the understanding that it doesn't work quite that swiftly and that easily.
Drill, baby, drill is a great slogan, but it doesn't really address the problem. I agree the average citizen needs to weigh in on this, and what we hope is that people will take the time through a program like this and other kinds of programs to really get educated on the issue. Because it won't solve all the problems or even part of the problems. And it takes this lease sale would start the exploration process. So the best estimate of the oil and gas we could get from this area, it will take some time to do the exploration before you would even begin to get, any return. And I think what people don't realize, we talked about the fish and all these other impacts, but nobody's thought really about, they think, oh, it's way out there in the ocean, oh, let's do it. The impacts that it would have on the coast as well, because you have to build facilities, you have to build refineries, you have to build pipelines. It's a big deal. And getting educated on all the aspects of drilling in the ocean, including all the things that we don't know that we could really mess up without having sufficient knowledge before we move forward. So I agree that people need to weigh in on this, but they need to learn about it rather than just do some kind of a quick, oh, it sounds good, we should get more oil.
And let me just add to that as well that the effect on prices, you wouldn't even begin to feel any impact until at least 2030, the former administration has said. And the former administration also acknowledged that even so, the impact would be insignificant on price of gas. And that's in part because we in the United States have such a very small percentage of the world's world's oil resources. So we're talking about an international market where we might have only 4%, and it's just not going to significantly impact prices at the pump.
So why are we doing this? I mean, we've made a couple very simple statements right there. The maximum amount of oil that can be retrieved wouldn't last more than 6 months at the current rate. It wouldn't affect the overall price of what I pay at the pump tomorrow. It wouldn't affect the overall price that I pay at the pump in 2030, which is the best date that we may be able to get it. So why are we doing this?
Well, in large part, we're doing it because the oil and gas industry want it. They want these additional leases. They've been lobbying to open this up for the past 26 years. They're a powerful part of our nation's political structure. And this is something that they really want.
For what reason, though? I've yet to understand what benefit it gives to them if it only provides enough oil, fossil fuel, for them to have it for 6 months.
They get sort of collectively, if they get the leases in the Atlantic coast, they get some more, get a lot more out of on the Pacific coast. They add to that in the Gulf of Mexico, that they have more options of where they can drill. And that's what they're looking for. I can't speak entirely for them, of course, but when we look at it, that's what appears to happen. Because as I mentioned before, they have a number of leases right now. They're using 20% of the lease sale that they could use.
And I think your rhetorical question is exactly right. There is no reason to do this. There's no logical reason to put at risk our coastal economies, the ecology. And another point that we haven't mentioned is that the Navy has been opposed to drilling off the coast of Virginia because the area involved is right in the middle of their very critical training area. And so they don't want this either. So, you know, from a number of reasons, there's just no point to allowing drilling off the coast of Virginia.
11:22 here on the Wake Up Call. Deborah Murray and Kay Slaughter, senior attorneys at the Southern Environmental Law Center, currently dealing with offshore drilling. It is the Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Cloudy in the morning, clear afternoon today. Highs 65 to 68. Clear tonight. Lows 35 to 40. And upper 20s in the valley. Sunny tomorrow. Highs 52 to 57. Right now, it's clear in the valley and 62, cloudy in Lynchburg at 63, some clouds in Richmond at 66, and what a wonderful day in Charlottesville at 66.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Let's thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. If it's keeping warm and having fun in the outdoors this winter, Blue Ridge has the gear for you. Whether your outdoor adventure is winter running, hiking, climbing, or snowshoeing, you'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barrack Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville, the Mountain Inn at Wintergreen, or at brms.com. And we also want to take time and thank the listeners, Kathy Henshey, Brenda Clement-Jones, and Gene McCusker, for contributing to WNRN's fund drive this past fall. It's because of people like them that you have the Wake Up Call on air every Sunday from 11 to 12. It's also because of other program underwriters like the ones you hear from this hour and Outback Lodge and H&H Waxmaster. So stay tuned. Tell a friend about the Wake Up Call. Be here next Sunday. And be sure to support us during the next fund drive starting in the spring. All right, back in action with Deborah Murray, Case Slaughter, and Offshore Drilling. If you have a question, 979-0919. Sean is back today, 877-967-6762. I see the phone ringing right now. Ladies, we've mentioned the phrase lease sale several times. Just define that for me a little bit as to what it is and how you, you know, make it happen.
Well, Mines and Minerals of the Department of Interior puts out a lease sale, and they negotiate it with a company. And essentially, the company leases the right to use the ocean floor for this drilling, and then they will be able to do the exploration, and then if it becomes a permanent facility. So they work out all of the deal, so to speak, with the federal government. And as Deborah mentioned, what happens preceding before that can happen is that it must go through a variety of environmental reviews and public discussion, and that's the process we're involved in now.
All right, let's see. We have a caller. Let me push all these buttons and see if I can actually make this equipment work. Scott, are you there?
I am.
And ladies, can you hear Scott?
Yes.
Okay. Fire away with your question or comment.
Okay. And this may be difficult to quantify, but one of the things, when you're talking about the basic economic trade-offs, seems like an oil company is making simply a fairly simple calculation. Is it worth it? Can we get enough in value of oil out to make it worth our investment in infrastructure? Taking a step back, is there any way to compare what the value of taking that same infrastructure investment, you talked about port upgrades, pipelines, and so forth, and putting that money into either increasing energy efficiency or doing other things besides just getting oil, increase energy efficiency, alternative energy sources, and so forth. So channeling that infrastructure investment money away into something else, do you have any way to compare that sort of economic trade-off?
You know, we have not done that kind of analysis, although we've been working very much on, in another part of our shop, on energy efficiency measures to help reduce the need for fuel in other ways. But you can look at some, so we have not done that kind of analysis, and I think probably over the next number of months we will see that coming out from others. But what we have done is looked at, and I think this came out even during the recent campaign, that the amount of money that you would, the amount of gallons that you would get from this kind of exploration and drilling in the coast, that you really could get this same kind of savings just by some very simple car owner things like inflating tires to the right amount, reducing the highway speed by 5 miles. So there are some ways just that the average person, if collectively we did it, we would save oil in that in those endeavors. And there also are other ways that we can work at, you know, in improving the CAFE standards, the miles per gallon, which is currently under discussion, so that the automakers would increase the miles per gallon that we would get in our cars. And again, that decreases the need for additional oil supplies.
And I think, Scott, that you raise a great point in terms of investing on the infrastructure, because you could use that money, I can't quantify it, but for instance, for offshore wind or any other number of solar, tidal, geothermal sources, whatever, and you would really be going down the path to energy independence and reduced dependence on fossil fuel. And the other thing I might mention is that the Federal Mines Mineral Service, part of the Department of Interior, also has responsibility in the permitting process for offshore wind. So there's a little bit of a schizoid going on here, because they're not, with the proposal for offshore drilling, they're not looking at the larger picture to see where these two might be in conflict and what other uses in the ocean would be impacted. So I think you're exactly right that we need to be looking at that more carefully and comprehensively.
979-0919 for your question. Thanks, Scott. That was a very interesting question, which leads me to a couple others. 979-0919 here at the studio. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is toll-free. Today's conversation about offshore drilling with Deborah Murray and Kay Slaughter from the Southern Environmental Law Center. Scott mentioned the money being spent to do this, just to shorten it up. But wouldn't some of the infrastructure put, or would some of the infrastructure put on the coast area, could that be used for something else besides fossil fuels out in the offshore area? Because, again, we go back to all the money being put into bringing forth oil from the continental shelf, and if it's going to run out in 6 months, I don't understand why that's being done. So it seems to me that for risk management purposes, wouldn't all this infrastructure money have a second use, secondary use for something, anything?
Well, of course, what the oil companies would be investing in this, and I assume that they would, when they used it up, if they put the refineries in, Virginia's the first place, and then they use up the oil there as they move on to the north, to North Carolina coast, that they might use some of the same infrastructure there. So, but that's our concern. Some of this infrastructure that they would put on the coast, that private money would go into investing it, could really change the coastline. I mean, we don't think about it because we say it's aesthetics, but tourism is a huge business. From Cape Cod to Cape Hatteras, it's like a billion-dollar industry a year and employs over a million people. And the same way with our fisheries in Virginia and North Carolina, our commercial fisheries are over $212 billion in commercial fish landings in 2007. And we have a very valuable sports recreational fishing industry as well. So,
Bill, I got a caller. Bill, hold on just a second. But while a lot of people would say that ExxonMobil and so many others don't always do the sharpest thing, don't make the best decisions, I'm having a hard time understanding why they would put millions of dollars to put some sort of factory on the coast and then leave it 6 months later.
Well, so are we.
Done all the oil.
So are we. You know, we can't answer that for the industry, but and it remains to be seen what kind of interest they're going to express. But it was the Bush administration's policy that they wanted to open it up.
And also part of it is they're not going to do it just for 6 months. What they do is, as I understand it, is they would be drilling. We're saying what the total supply would then last, but they will be getting it in from there, getting it, hopefully, they think, from their point of view, getting some more from the North Carolina coast, and then collectively being able to use those facilities. So they're not going to just get it in 6 months and use it. We're saying the total amount that they would get over however many years they might be there would actually last for that period of time at current rates of consumption.
All right, let's take this call. We have Bill from Charlottesville. Hey, Bill.
Good morning.
Question, comment?
Am I coming through okay?
You're coming through just fine.
Right. I understand that there are some offshore oil platforms in the Gulf of Mexico off the coast of Texas and Louisiana, but I've not heard of any negative impacts of that drilling along those coastlines. Yet, surprisingly, the number of oil platforms in that area exceeds 4,500 platforms. Could you comment on whether or not I just am unaware of the deleterious effects of those platforms, or is it indeed safer than one might believe?
All right. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
Well, I think one thing you have to remember, I don't have the statistics right in front of me. I'll search for them in a moment. But it hasn't been as safe as one would hope with the hurricane spills. You know, go back to Katrina and think of what happened in that situation. And you always have that possibility. And, of course, our area is also prone to hurricanes. And if you have an oil spill, here's a good statistic, that it spreads at the rate of a half of a football field per second. So there can be wide-ranging impacts, and the currents are complex off our coast, and it isn't going to just be limited to the Virginia area, which would be bad enough. So that's one thing.
And another is that, as we were talking about what happens along the coast, when you lay the pipelines in the coastal environments, you have to excavate through wetlands. And it takes about 6 acres of wetlands for each linear mile of pipeline. And Louisiana, for example, has lost up to 40 square miles of marsh a year for several decades. It's approximately 80% of the nation's annual coastal wetlands loss, and a substantial number of these losses are estimated to be due to oil and gas production. So when you had Hurricane Katrina, you'd lost the wetlands that were going to protect the coast from the kind of inundation that we got. So it's all interconnected, but yes, there have been many recorded damages. And again, as we mentioned, we're concerned not just about these spills and about the destruction along the coastline, but we are concerned about the migratory habitat in the Atlantic.
And as I mentioned earlier, the government already acknowledges, as do the leading scientists, that you can't just take the results from the Gulf and transfer them wholesale to what might happen on the mid-Atlantic. We just don't have the data, and the situation is very different. I found the statistic that I was looking for, the during Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, over 435,000 gallons of oil were spilled from platforms and drilling rigs, and over 300,000 gallons of oil leaked from pipelines that were damaged, and 8 million gallons of petroleum products were spilled from onshore facilities. So that together, the spilled and leaked oil amounted to almost as much as the 11 million gallons spilled by the Exxon Valdez back in 1989.
All right, we have another call. Actually, from what I can tell, it's Scott the Sequel. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Ed, a follow-up to your follow-up to my follow-up, as it were. I wonder if there's any way to track the oil company's overall cost of leasing development and recovery of the oil. I would suspect, going back to your issue of the how does it make economic sense to them, my suspicion is that we, the taxpayers, through tax breaks, probably end up footing the bill for a lot of the exploration and development costs. Is there any way to track that, and is that perhaps the case?
You know, Scott, that's a good question, and I know that there are subsidies, but we have not tracked those yet. And probably as this continues on, we'll look to others to help us see exactly what those costs are.
All right, thanks, Scott. 11:39 here on the Wake Up Call. Southern Environmental Law Center senior attorneys Deborah Murray and Kay Slaughter with us. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS for the toll-free phone line.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, travel Route 29 north of Charlottesville, and everywhere you'll see one of developer Wendell Wood's projects Some say Woods has done the community a service. Others shake their head and disagree. An essayist writes that Olympian Michael Phelps should not have apologized for taking his toke. After all, 8 gold medals and some heavy smoke shatter the image of the doped-up slacker. And what's happening to the proposed rail link from Central Virginia to New York? Some are blaming a single state senator for stopping the rail. The hook. Press to lock, lift to open. And let's thank 45fix.com. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. That's the number 4 and the number 5 and the word fix.com. All right, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, 1141. In the studio with Deborah Murray and Kay Slaughter talking about offshore drilling. Ladies, Kay, I think it was you who made mention earlier about 20% of areas that are already leased to the oil companies actually in use. Can you explain that to me again? I seem to be having such a hard time understanding. Are these oil companies just trying to buy up as much property as possible? Are they part of the thing that says real estate market is not so bad?
Well, you know, I really can't speak for them. That is the way it appears to us, is that they try in their plans to have as many different places to go as possible and are trying to get these leases and then do the exploration. But there have been discussions in Congress about that they potentially should use them or lose them and things like that, but it has not changed. So I really I can't speak for why they're doing that.
Does that include, because I understand that a lot of their lease rights are in the Texas area, the West. Does that include water?
Yes, that would include water as well, although, as we mentioned, there have been moratoria on the Atlantic coast, so there haven't been any in the Atlantic coast.
All right, so not in the Atlantic coast, but still I would think that water would be such of greater importance in the western area. All right, here's a question that came in. Over the internet, WNRN Studio, by the way, if you want to send me an instant message and ask your question that way, 979-0919 for the phone use. You only mentioned cons. Are there any pros?
Not in our estimation.
And I realize that we're asking two people from the Southern Environmental Law Center, and I would guess that as fair-minded as you try to be, you are indeed coming in from one side of the aisle, correct?
That's correct. And all I can say to that is, you know, we are opposed, obviously, to offshore drilling in the Atlantic, but I'll just state the statistics again very plainly and fairly, that if you drill off the coast of Virginia, we're talking about a 6-day supply of oil and an 18-day supply of natural gas. And over the entire Atlantic, we're talking about 6 months for oil and 18 months for natural gas. So put that against all the risks that we know about and the harms, and I think anyone can reach their own conclusion. A couple of things that I wanted to mention in addition, we talked earlier about the public being involved in the process. There's an opportunity right now for the public to submit comments on how they, on this, mentioned the 5-year program, which delineates those areas across the country that will be considered for lease sales. And right now, currently, there are areas in Virginia that are in that, as well as other areas on the Atlantic in the draft that's come out. So if the public wants to speak out and say whether or not they want this off our coast, they can submit comments by March 23rd, and we can give you more details if you want that information.
What's the Southern Environmental Law Center's easy web address? Because I would think that there's tons of links.
Southernenvironment.org.
Southernenvironment.org. Okay. Don't forget that this program is podcast, by the way. If you're finding us late in the day, SeavillePodcast.com, and Sean will have it up and running, if not later today, certainly tomorrow.
And I want to say, I got involved in this some 20 years ago, maybe as a lot of listeners who go to the Outer Banks. And I go to the Outer Banks every year. And on Ocracoke Island, when this was proposed some 20 years ago off the North Carolina coast, I saw how fishermen and how fishing villages felt about this. They were totally opposed to it. They said this will really be bad for our industry, the only industry that we have. Some of us forget that because we just go there during our tourist times, but we forget that there are whole economies that are based on fishing and tourism industries. And when I was there and heard them talk about it, that was what really got me interested. Even before our organization was involved with it.
Another thing, we've been talking about drilling, and I just wanted to make sure that people understand as well that the harms are also there just in the exploration stage. So it's not just only the drilling.
Talk about that, because are you talking about the seismic sounds? Is that what you're referring
exactly.
to?
Exactly.
Explain that a
Which,
little bit.
The seismic, they have to send out the blast, you know, air guns that send seismic waves, which are very detrimental to marine mammals and fish species and also potentially sea turtles, particularly the whales. And we've talked about the fact that there are a few whales that are on the endangered species list, that these are important migratory corridors for them. And the northern right whale is one. And this is a migration corridor between their feeding areas and their calving areas. And it's just deadly for them. And there are only about 300 northern right whales left. So you lose one, and we're really talking about extinction. They're also at risk from ship strikes. And, of course, you'd have more ships in the area going back and forth. And that's a huge problem for the northern right whale. So, and when you look also, when you do get to the point of the drilling, you have issues from drilling muds, which have toxic pollutants, produce water, so to speak, the waste that's dumped into the ocean that are also toxic potentially to fish. And then, of course, we're talking about air pollution, and that's just those direct impacts. And you have to consider as well, as Kay has mentioned quite a few times, about the onshore pollution from refineries, etc. So it's a cradle to grave issue of posing severe environmental and economic risks, as well as the national security concern that the Navy has identified.
And I might just mention one of the ways we've been involved, these comments that we've done, really been to pull together and to say to the Department of Interior, you need to talk to these other agencies that know more about this than we do, but to talk to the National Marine Fisheries, to talk to all of these different agencies that do have some information and are where we get our information from. But again, as Deborah pointed out at the beginning of the show, the lack of studies is something that all the scientists are saying. We really need a lot more baseline studies on the particular impacts that would occur from this kind of activity.
And I think, you know, one of the things that people can probably understand as well is that we need more studies to know more about the impacts, but the federal government has already said, well, we don't have the money. This was in the Bush administration. So we're not even going to begin any studies until the year in which those leases would go forward. So regardless of how you feel about offshore drilling, the Bush administration policies are putting the cart before the horse of going forward in the absence of information. And I don't think that does anyone any good.
All right. Kay Slaughter and Deborah Murray here. As we talk about offshore drilling, not much time left, so if you have a question or a comment, now's the time. I got tons of questions, so if you just want me to chat, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support during the hour. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. And the man just walked in the room, Drew Thompson, will be here for Les Temps Purdue in just a few moments. If French isn't your thing here at the station, that means the time's gone by, and 80s and 90s alternative music. Tune in for it next. Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right, ladies. Somebody used the word economic in that last bit of conversation. Are these leases taking place or being allowed possibly to continue with our new administration because of the economic needs?
I don't think it would be the economic needs of the oil companies.
Not their economic needs. I'm talking about them giving money, spending money that would be income for the government.
I don't think so. I think it's the I think the verdict is out on what the administration's going to do. I believe that from everything that it has said is trying to get a big picture look at our energy efficiency needs and moving forward into the 21st century instead of just retaining this dependency on these different small amounts of oil and putting a lot of time and energy, pardon the pun, into getting that last bit of oil out of the ocean. I think that there will be an evaluation, and we hope that the evaluation will conclude that they do not need to move forward with these lease sales. But I think the verdict is out on that, and I believe the new Secretary Salazar is looking at those issues, and I'm sure we'll hear something in the coming months.
All right, let's take a call. It's my man Doug from Richmond. Hey, Doug.
Hey, how's it going?
Going all right. What you got?
All the work has gone into saving the bay, and I just feel like there's going to be an accident, you know, with the oil thing. They start drilling offshore, and then you're going to have mouse like the Exxon Valdez, and it never... The environment never fully recovers. And the people on the Eastern Shore, watermen, that are already out of work because it's overworked, and it's just overworked, and the restrictions that are applied on them. But I'm kind of for it in a way because I mean, I want it, but I don't want it in my backyard, you know.
Yeah, well, a lot of people say that, man. All right, I'm going to let the ladies get back because we're going to jump onto that real quick, all right?
All right. Let me just say, Doug, we haven't even talked about the impacts on the Chesapeake Bay, but we're very concerned about that because, of course, the fish don't just decide they're going to stay in the ocean. The oysters, some of the spawning grounds are outside of the bay. There are real concerns about the bay. The Chesapeake Bay Foundation has also weighed in, saying they're concerned about this process because it would affect the bay and the habitat for the blue crab fishery as well as the oyster habitat. And, you know, the pollution of all the different other aspects of the bay. So I think it is a real concern, although we've been focusing mostly during this hour on the ocean.
Yeah, just on the blue crab fishery, as you know, that's already in trouble. And some life stages of the blue crab are out in the area where, you know, more than 50 miles, they're found more than 50 miles offshore. So that's a real, real concern about the bay being such a sensitive area. And as you say, we've poured a lot of money into trying to recover the bay. And this would be contrary to that.
All right, just a few moments left here. Caller, hang on. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetwater Amherst Lynchburg. A quick, easy question from an anonymous caller. Didn't want to get on the air. It makes sense. How did our guests get to the station? Walk, bike, carpool, etc.
We carpooled.
All right. We are talking about fossil fuels and the need to reduce what we have to reduce the need for offshore drilling. All right. We got a call on air from Gary at Chadwell. Hey, Gary.
Hello. To add on to what the last caller said, the Chesapeake Bay, the whole area is already in such a fragile state, and it's taken so long to even get it. I don't know if it's improved. I mean, a lot of people I know who do fish and deal with that there haven't seen as much improvement as was hoped, you know. So the first question I have would be, I wonder why they're not just putting more energy into what's already, you know, the sites they already have to make them safer and to perhaps, you know, just improve those instead of doing something new. And then my comment is, these CEOs who thought of this idea of drilling offshore near Virginia, have they been tested for dementia? I'm serious. I mean, it's insane. I mean, the whole thought of drilling, you know, in this area with regard to all the expense and the fragile nature of the environment. That's about as crazy as it gets.
All right, Gary. I don't know if they're being tested for dementia, but my guess is that their wallets feel a little lighter and could use more money. All right, man. I'm going to let the ladies jump into that.
Well, just again to say, yes, I guess maybe the problem is you have one group of people, one part of government trying to deal with bay restoration, and you have another part of the federal government doing these lease sales. And often it's very clear they're not talking to each other, you know. And one of our efforts in these comments is to say to the Department of Interior, you need to be talking to these other agencies because we've identified these potential risks to the bay. And so that's part of what our message is. And I think you're very correct. The bay has a lot of problems. We're looking at some different ways to approach them, and this is not the time for yet another issue.
And you left out the third party, Kay, which is those who are trying to help the farmers who aren't anywhere near the bay, but whose farm runoff is having access or effect on the bay.
Yes, there are many parties that are having effect on the bay, and so they're being asked to step up to the plate and to really make a difference, and it just seems very contrary to that to say, oh, well, let's now look for oil in the Atlantic, even though that may undo all of the things that we try to do by working with the farmers, the sewage treatment plants, and the cities and counties that are developing near the bay.
All right, just a minute left. Ladies, once again, the website and what the average citizen can do if they are interested in commenting on this topic, pro or con. Granted, I know the two of you want them to go one way, but just so that there's citizen input.
Our website, again, is southernenvironment.org, O-R-G, and you can find links there on this issue. You can submit comments to the Minerals Management Service. You have to do so by March 23rd on this program for the next 5 years to include areas off the Atlantic, including Virginia, for sale for oil drilling and natural gas.
All right. Thanks to Kay Slaughter and Deborah Murray from coming over from Southern Environmental Law Center. Special thanks for squeezing together to use that one microphone. Someday, people will stop messing with this mixer board before I get in here, and maybe I'll learn the 1,000 options on how to run it. Thanks again, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And God forbid that we don't find that poor gentleman who shot my dog.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.